With the Masters?
No, 164.
Okay. Remember when you first started working in Hattiesburg?
Yeah, about 6 months before those demonstrations.
Okay.
And what we did then was...
Who went with you, do you know? Were you there alone? Or were you...
No. Peter Stoner. Mm-hmm.
And where did he come from?
He came from New York. He was a white guy who went to Tougaloo. John O'Neill was already there. John O'Neill had done the original work. Mm-hmm. John O'Neill was later to go on and participate in that Free Southern Theater.
Right. So he was there when you...
He was there. And a guy named Lee Charles Glenn, who's from Hattiesburg, Doug Smith, Reverend Ponder's son, Victoria Gray, I met Andy Young in Hattiesburg in about that time, and he told me, he said, you know what I want to do, Guyana? I said, what? He said, I want to go to Congress. I said, well, go ahead, you know, we will have a vote, and you can go ahead and do that. But I said it only to point out, he had made up his mind on that early. Now, Hattiesburg, a different setting, not agricultural, but a police department that was terroristic. I mean, they had a reputation, and they lived up to their reputation. And it was, we had to build it church by church. But see, one of the good things we had in that was Vernon Damer, who was later to be killed in 1965, the president of the NAACP there, Victoria Gray's brother, Mr. Jackson, the guy who owned the store down from the office. We had they were sort of reluctant to give their blessing to SNCC, okay? But Vernon Damer made the difference. Mm-hmm. Vernon Damer was tough, aggressive, and at the same time very stabilizing. I mean, once he said it was all right, the rest of the NAACP fell in line. We started church by church using what we'd learned in Greenwood, finding leadership. But again,
was it easier to get in the churches in Hattiesburg than Greenwood?
No. No, it was case by case. Mm-hmm. And see, one of the other things in Greenwood and in Hattiesburg where we had a difference was we could get into the newspapers there. I mean, the guy named Sanford Rose Lee was constantly writing and reacting, who was a SNCC guy, was constantly reacting to people, white people, who were writing in the letters to the editor section. So that sort of opened the doors to us for the black middle class.
So they would print letters to the editor.
That's right. That's right. See, also, we were able to see the impact of whites in Hattiesburg. Because when we conducted the freedom vote, okay, mm-hmm. whites got access to the radio stations, to the television stations. The FBI was everywhere. I mean, you talk about coverage. Mm-hmm. There was damn near an FBI agent for every volunteer. So then, quite naturally, if that's going to stop violence, if the federal government's not going to, that was one of the primordial gestations of the Song Project in 64. What else did we find in Hattiesburg? We found that, again, it was the young people, females, then the males. Then the ministers, some of them moved to come in and take it over. John Cameron, candidate for Congress. Mm-hmm. Okay. When we had the voter registration drive going, and really going very, very well, he wanted to start an economic boycott of the buses, okay? And simply because we had access to the people, and some of us could speak as well as extemporaneously as he could, we killed that. Because it wasn't really about what bringing about political power. Mm-hmm. There was another thing that was unique.
You were afraid that if even if you won that, that people would see that as a victory and
mm-hmm. Plus it would take up time, energy, and that we needed.
Right.
But you had something else in Hattiesburg. You had the pedal paper, which was very liberal. Mm-hmm. You had some families, like the Fairchilds and the Foote family, who were secret contributors. I mean, they did as much as they could, very wealthy, to keep the violence down as much as possible.
Do you know what those families did for a living or where their money came
from? Very wealthy. Very, very, very wealthy. The Fairchilds were, hell, extremely wealthy, mm-hmm. as was the Foote family.
Well, do you know what kind of business they were in, the Fairchild?
Department stores mm-hmm. for the Foote family, and Fairchilds was in construction. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the same Fairchilds who recently got caught up in the whole drug thing.
Gotcha.
The Catholic Church in Hattiesburg was pretty much intimidated. And that was the first time we saw that, because everywhere else we'd seen the Catholic Church, it had been on the case. Okay.
I visited with Father Macheski.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically run out of the floor finally. He's up in Tallahatchie now.
That's it.
They moved him on, but he's a neat man.
Yeah. We were dealing with a different constituency in Hattiesburg than we dealt with in Greenwood. So we dealt with it differently.
Just because of the poverty in the Delta?
Not so much the poverty, but there was a different relationship to information. There was a different kind of expectancy. You expected people in Hattiesburg had more what I could safely describe as middle class expectations. I mean, they expected to be able to move around. You had more black doctors there. You had more black role models that couldn't be dealt with. I mean, you had some gamblers there who were very, very wealthy men, and who, when there was a need for money. I mean, the reason I didn't go to the Democratic National Convention in 64 was they had arrested me during the church demonstrations, sort of held it in abeyance. And if I had not gone to jail, then three people would have lost the property that they put up for me. So quite naturally, I just went to jail, mm-hmm. okay, with no reservation whatsoever.
Some of those were the gamblers?
No. Oh. No, I didn't mean to make that that connection. Okay. But I'm saying that everything that could be organized in that community, we organized, from the prostitutes to the gamblers to the whiskey makers to you name it, to the middle class ministers, the black businessmen, the black doctors. You see, again, it becomes a question of the difference in that policy. Dr. Smith, who was in Hattiesburg, had a relationship with Paul Johnson, who was from Hattiesburg and who was the former governor at that time. So that one became tricky, okay? Mm-hmm. But,
do you know his first name, Dr. Smith?
I think it's Charles Smith.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
the other thing is,
when you say tricky, because he felt pressures from Johnson?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Johnson owned the building he was in. Mm-hmm.
So. And what role did Dr. Smith play in it?
Oh, supportive and publicly, but I don't, you know.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of adoption, quick adoption, and widespread support for the educational programs in Hattiesburg. Teaching adults how to read, sending people for training to Highlander, sponsored by SCLC, and then coming back and really operating on that. People just soaked that up. Mm-hmm. Okay, that was sort of a program that ran itself.
Almost because, again, is that sort of tied in the middle class aspirations?
I think so. And you had a better, in a state with a bad school system, you had a good one in Hattiesburg. Mm-hmm. You had a community that insisted that it be even better. Mm-hmm. It's ironic. Miss Bodon, one of the people who taught me in high school, had left Hattiesburg. And she always talked about how good that school is. And then when I got there, I got a chance to see it.
Because that goes back, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't the Freedom School program most successful?
There's no question.
In Hattiesburg?
There's no question.
Okay, and is this, again, tied into this, again, more probably parental approval?
Parental approval and the unquestioned position that education was the most important thing that going. Mm-hmm. That all of the, everything else was ephemeral. Mm-hmm. The central issue was get the information. See, you had better prepared ministers who could deal realistically and politically very quickly. I mean, you had people like Victoria Gray, who had been a salesperson, who could charm any audience out of anything. I mean, she got SCLC to contribute $7,000 to the Congressional Challenge. Mm-hmm.
What was her background?
She was a salesperson. She was very, very involved, very in the Methodist Church, mm-hmm. And used those talents to become a hell of an organizer. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was fearless, utterly fearless, mm-hmm. Very comfortable in the middle class, but not of the middle class, mm-hmm. Which was to our advantage. Because she was key in what happened in Hattiesburg, but she was also key in other parts of the state. Peggy Connor, a hairdresser, whose father was very, very involved, very political. When we conducted the congressional hearings in 65, her father took on J.P. Coleman. And at first their position was, we don't have to do this. Then they decided they had to do it, because they didn't want us to have ammunition to carry back to the Congress. Mm-hmm. See, I think it's very important that you go to the Center for Constitutional Law in New York and read those transcripts, because they cover the entire state. Mm-hmm. And you ought to really continue your paper from 61 to 65 so you can look at the Congressional Challenge. Mm-hmm. Because the most important thing ever happened in Mississippi was not 64,
right,
but 65, because 65 helped pass the Voting Rights Act. All historians have said, and I can justify it, I go back to the congressional record, talk to Conoy, read those transcripts. There was a liberal congressman from Ohio who said, look, we got two choices. We can either unseat the Mississippi delegation, or we can pass the Voting Rights Act. But he made it very, very clear, you could do either one of the two. Mm-hmm. See, once the state of Mississippi found out that we had the votes on the first vote, that this was going to be voted on straight up and down. Mm-hmm. J.P. Coleman served us the papers, and the word was passed by the Mississippi Economic Council there would be no violence in Mississippi for the next 6 months, and it was none. Mm-hmm. Then we started conducting the hearings. Then people really took us serious, because, see, that goes back to another thing. You talked about Moses and his relationship to the MFDP after Atlantic City. Well, you see, Moses and a lot of other folks thought that the purpose of MFDP was simply to go to Atlantic City and then to disband. My position was, despite the fact that I was a chairman of it, believe me on that, was that we didn't have party registration in Mississippi. That there was that the real power in Mississippi was in the Democratic Party. That they were vulnerable on the question of loyalty. So why don't we simply go back and build a base? Okay. We couldn't get a lot of SNCC people disagreed with us on that, mm-hmm. and left and went to Selma, right. other places. Okay. Hey, but the basic point was true and it was quite real because what we were able to do.
Well, let me understand. What was the disagreement?
The disagreement was that, you know, Atlantic City had proved that, you know, why waste time working in the Democratic Party. But even more important than that, we've accomplished all we can. Let's pretty much let it die. My position, and I was able to persuade the other folks to come around to my position, that, hey, we got it. Why not build it? Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's what we did. Mm-hmm. Now, Byron Rustin in Commentary Magazine attacked us saying, you know, these people don't understand the difference between politics and protest. Well, we were vindicated. Because the same people that we fought in 64, Hubert Humphrey, Mondale, Andy Young, Aaron Henry, we fought in 84. Jesse Jackson fought the same people. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, and you know, the interesting thing is the Joint Center for Political Studies, before it had taken a position that runoff primaries were discriminatory to women and blacks. That's obvious, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But around the Mondale politics, when Jesse raised that question, the Joint Center was then asked, and they said, well, we don't have a position on it. It just goes to show, mm-hmm. both in 84 and in 64, when you really challenge people politically on issues, they go to whoever pays them. The president of UAW said to Martin Luther King, look, Martin, you got $66,000 last year. If you side with MFDP, you won't get anything this year. Mm-hmm. Hold on just a minute. Get that off of that. I'll be back.
Okay.
What we were able to do was man a legal arsenal that included Kanoi, Ben Smith from New Orleans, Kunstler. That was early on. It was later to be joined by Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, LCDC, Al Bronstein. Mm-hmm. What we were able to do, you need to look at a book called Political Participation by 1968 that was written by the Civil Rights Commission. Frank Parker, who is in Washington, and you ought to talk to him because he's now with the Joint Center for Political Studies. He did a lot of work on reapportionment, okay, redistricting, what have you. Mm-hmm. But we filed a first suit, Connor versus Johnson, Peggy Connor versus Paul Johnson. It took something like 26 years mm-hmm. for it to be finalized. It went in and out of the Supreme Court, what have you. But that suit led to the number of blacks in the state legislature now. Okay, what else did MFDP accomplish? We politicized the civil rights movement. There was just no question about that. I mean, when we talked about the kind of organizing that we did, Paul Jacobs and a few others agreed with us that what we were really talking about was parallel institutionalization. You have an institution that's not functioning, so you cover it with one that is functioning. Mm-hmm. And you make the fight around function rather than identification. The state legislature passed a bill saying that they had the right to consolidate any two adjoining counties. You get the picture?
Mm-hmm.
There would have been no black majority in any county.
Right.
We went into federal district court. We stopped them. Why? Because under Section 5, it had not been submitted. As you know, no two adjoining counties have ever been. Even though the law is still on the books, we got a written agreement from the Attorney General, William Wills, Vice Attorney General, that the law would never be implemented. It never has been. On the question of Vietnam, the first group in the country to speak out against Vietnam was the MFDP.
Mm-hmm.
then Martin Luther King, then Julian later on. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, one of the reasons we sort of soft-pedaled it after a while was we had every reason to believe, given the agreement that had been offered me by Lyndon Baines Johnson, that if we just dropped the other four council members, I mean four congressmen, and went just after John Bell Williams, he would help us. Our position was no. We got them all. Mm-hmm. Section 2 of the 14th Amendment is clear. And what Lyndon was fighting against, what we were fighting for, if we won Texas, Alabama, Louisiana,
right,
you couldn't win one and not win them all.
Right.
Okay. Needless to say, just as people were told in Atlantic City, look, your husband is up for a federal judgeship. If you don't vote right on the credentials committee, he won't get it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the FBI tapped every phone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is no longer, this is not hearsay. This is,
right.
Okay. But then, see, we were later able to do other things. I mean, the whole question of bringing people from Mississippi to Washington in support of the challenge, the county that used that better than any other county was Holmes County.
Mm-hmm.
They came in here. They had a master plan. They went into every federal agency, developed contacts, went back to to Holmes County and utilized those contacts and maintained them.
Mm-hmm.
Rolfus Hayes, Hartman Turnbull. Howard Taft Bailey. You got to go talk to him.
He's still down there?
He's still down there. He's a member of the Board of Supervisors. And you talk about crafty old men. I mean, these guys ran that county. Well, you see, again, it's a question of independence. That county had a history during the Roosevelt era. They broke up the plantations, got a lot of small landowners. And they also had a health service thing that was run by whites, and those whites were run out of the county. But
right,
people had been exposed to it, see. These were fearless, independent men, and you should definitely talk to him.
Okay.
MFDP was able to get people interested in running, was able to get people beyond the question of fear. We elected Robert Clark to the state legislature. The question is asked, well, a lot of people ran at that time, but only, I was 16 people y'all ran, only five of them were elected. We said, look at what we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to make any excuse, but look at the reality. I mean, we're talking about bringing people in who had never thought they could even run, much less get elected.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a whole question of money. There was a whole question of, and we learned very, very well in Sunflower, in the case of Hamer versus Campbell, where they ordered new elections based on discrimination. Some of the candidates that we selected to run for the city office were called by the white candidates and said, look, there's a water tower. Do you think you could fix that if it breaks? We see when you get into questions of specific, like, hell, any city can hire people to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes to, some people were able to turn that into, he's not qualified, he can't fix the water tower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we dealt with the Vietnam question, straight up and down. We pulled off the congressional challenge. We got people involved in a hell of a lot of counties around politics. The first Section 5 case, I know you know what Section 5 is, of the Voting Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
It says that any change in the pattern which has the potential of
right,
diluting the black vote shall be
mm-hmm,
cast out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, that's interesting, because the first case filed was a case called Clifton Whitley versus Johnson. It was out of MFDP's case. Let me tell you the history of that. I read a book called Gideon versus Wainwright, and I got a picture of the personality of Lyndon Baines Johnson. Then when the Voting Rights Act passed, I said, well, anybody who's as astute and stubborn and knowledgeable and creative about politics as Lyndon Baines Johnson, there's got to be something in this Voting Rights Act to help me along. So I asked Jim Lewis, who was the lawyer's Constitutional Defense Committee, to find it. Lo and behold, I have Section 5. We filed the first non-governmental Section 5 case in the country. The only other case before us was United States versus Utah, which tested the constitutionality of the Voting Rights Act. Mm-hmm. Then they had ours. Well, the Department of Justice joined right in with us because they sensed one thing I was later to find out. There's a whole, that covers the whole gamut. Mm-hmm. Redistricting, relocation of polling places, changing polling, changing offices from elected to appointed, which all of which was done now. Mm-hmm. But every chance we got, all we had to do was get to a federal district court and said, here's the Voting Rights Act, mm-hmm. and here's what they've done. Mm-hmm. There's an inconsistency. Boom. And I'm saying that to say this. Despite its small numbers, despite its absence of money, the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party played a key role in not only politicizing the civil rights movement, but in forcing this country to deal with the reality that when you bring blacks into politics around their own self-interest, they alter it in every one of its parameters. Mm-hmm. I make no bones about the fact that we were pushing the political avenue long before Julian was elected, long before Marion was elected, mm-hmm. you know, long before Walter Fauntroy was elected. And there were very few other groups doing that. I don't know of any that were not doing it in conjunction with us. CORE, SCLC supported us in hearings before the Democratic National Committee on party change, okay, mm-hmm. and said that we should be recognized as a state party and stuff. But the real issue was not so much recognition by the Democratic Party, but altering the function of political parties. I mean, right now, for all practical purposes, in this city and in Mississippi, the Democratic Party exists for the sole purpose of electing Democrats. That's foolish. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's like having this only to use it 2 days out of 365.
Right.
See, because I believe, and what I've learned in Mississippi proves it to me, that when you get to, and there was another guy I met, Berensky. See, I've been exposed to some of the best minds. David Broder, the writer for the Washington Post, I met in 1957 at Tugaloo. He was a visiting writer. I mean, but Berensky had this theory about some institutions are functional only by their dire functionality. And I constantly tried to disprove that. And to me, the function of political parties is the characteristic. I mean, is the classic example. Because a political party should be about the total person, his or her everyday life. Okay. Not simply selecting which of their members you're going to elect to an office that might not serve the people anyway. Mm-hmm. See? And I think given the national voter apathy and given the national disillusionment with political parties, I think they're going to have to deal with that question mm-hmm. that we've been trying to force them to deal with long, long time ago. Mm-hmm.
How would you answer the question? It's two part. SNCC was slow to think about economics, and second, that the MFDP was slow to think about economics.
Hey, man. Myself, Harry Bowie, Owen Brooks. Oh, let me tell you something else. What came out of Hattiesburg? When I brought the ministers to Hattiesburg, that led to the formation of the Delta Ministry, which stayed in Mississippi for years. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was another accomplishment, a positive spinoff from Hattiesburg. Mm-hmm. Okay, but how to answer that question? Let me just say this. It's amazing. This question is now come. It came up. I was at a dinner with William Raspberry, Henry Kirksey, who you must talk to, mm-hmm. state senator, Frank Parker, and Frank sort of took that line. You know. MFDP, while it did some great things for registration and pilot, it didn't do with economic. Well, it was never intended to. Mm-hmm. Those are really two different worlds. But let me show you the overlapping. Myself, Hartman Turnbull. No, Howard Taft Bailey. Owen Brooks. Harry Bowie. Who you must talk to. He's in Macomb.
Talk to him.
You have talked to him? Good. We organized the Delta Foundation, which became a multi-million dollar program. They hired people. You know that. I'm sure you've talked to people about that. So it wasn't as though we were uninterested in economic development. It was a question of, if you get as much political clout as you have, and you don't convert that into, I mean, we were talking about a state that could say to a factory, come in, and you don't have to pay out of valorem tax for 10 years. We have an uneducated workforce. And I'm sure they said this tongue in cheek, but we got a good one. You don't have to worry about labor unions.
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, I don't have a problem with what should have been done first. Mm-hmm. And I certainly don't say, damn the economic development. Mm-hmm. That would be ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
But to the critics of me and the MFDP on that, I would say, you're absolutely right. What were you doing? I mean, you know, no one has a monopoly on economic development.
Right.
One of the other things we learned was that when you talk about economic development, when you talk about religion, when you talk about education, once you learn the skills that was learned in Mississippi, they're applicable in all of those disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just the correlation between information and power, how to use it, how to prioritize, how to time what you're going to do, how do you develop its setting rather than allow someone else to develop. How to formulate the questions.
Mm-hmm.
How to formulate the steps to be followed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was your other question?
Well, that same question, you know, vis-a-vis SNCC.
SNCC?
I mean, SNCC? 2 years earlier.
SNCC was involved in economic development. New communities. Southwest Georgia. Charles Sherrod.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that was about.
Mm-hmm.
Charles is now in the city council, as you know. But see, I don't think they would have. I think SNCC being involved in economic development would have been like me being involved in buying ovens to kill black folks. I mean, and I say that to say this. The beauty of SNCC was that it was able to bring together very talented, extremely talented, creative and courageous people from across the country,
mm-hmm.
weld them together, and have them explode internally and externally, both conceptually and practically. Most people... Hello? I am still sometimes in a wonder at the intellectual ability of people in SNCC. It is the level of debate and the level of commitment and the level of... See, the beautiful thing about it was not only its intellectual capacity, individually and collectively, but its ability to move very, very quickly from the conceptual to the implementation stage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't waste a lot of time talking about what we were going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it, we planned it, and we did it.
I guess the freedom vote might be the classic example of that in some ways. How quickly that is.
The freedom vote and the summer project.
Mm-hmm.
See, because the way that politics played down, we met in Greenville. And the first day it was chaired by Dave Dennis. And the decision was not to have the summer, the 6-4 summer. And the classic reasons being, we had brought new people on staff who were not as well trained, who now had a base, who were just as a dominant force as I was, or anyone else was. And why bring in competition to unravel that? Then Moses came the second day.
Quite sure I understand what you just meant by that.
What I'm saying is, you would bring in white, talented, educated folks to come into this system, and the question of who's the leader.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But then Moses came the second day, and he chatted to me, and he insisted that we had seen what had happened in the summer, in the freedom election, that we had to bring the nation to Mississippi to protect all of us, and that he didn't want to be a part of anything that was all black, which was later to be changed. Let's look at the positive accomplishments of SNCC in Mississippi. The Mario Fabio came there, the guy who was later to lead the free speech movement. Al Lowenstein came, tried to take it over. We were able to repel that. He was later to red bait us. Okay. The women's movement, as far as its political thrust, came right out of Mississippi. I see her face now. Mary King.
Mm-hmm. She's writing a book, by the way.
I gotcha. You know, that's the whole question of blacks owning television stations. I remember the day in 1964 when A.A. Branch walked into the Kofor office and had the papers for the suit that was to be filed against WLBT. Blacks now own and control WLBT. Mm-hmm. But it didn't just happen. That was a process that started then. The litigation, the involvement of the National Council of Churches with the FCC on that question. When, in 62, when R.L.T. Smith ran,
right, I was just about to mention that.
We were told we would love to sell y'all time, but we're just afraid the television station would be bombed. We couldn't protect y'all. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying? In 1962, Moses and some other folks went to the state legislature and were told to leave from the balcony. Now we got black city man. Mm-hmm. So, I think that when you look around at, when you compare the involvement politically and in the development of leadership, there's no organization in American history that can deal with SNCC. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, the NAACP was the master on litigation. But when Moses went to Roy Wilkins, he told him, he said, look, our program in Mississippi is to raise money. He said, we feel anybody who tries to organize locally in Mississippi is crazy. We're not going to do that. Our position is Mississippi should be cut off and let it drift into the sea. So he left the NAACP, went to SCLC. They had him stuck in envelopes. Mm-hmm. So when Ella Baker created a situation for SNCC to come, he moved to SNCC, brought some people with him. To me, one of the other selling points for SNCC was it wasn't about the job of creating new members. If somebody wanted to come in, fine. If they didn't, if they wanted to maintain their independence, if they were fighting for black folks, we had no reservation in doing everything we could for them. Not only for them, but with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't send them instructions from New York. We were there. Mm-hmm. They got in trouble, we were in trouble. They won, we won. And we always made sure people understood we wanted to be there permanently. That, you know, this is your thing. Mm-hmm. Let's work together on it. Mm-hmm. See, and people, I never will forget. In 1962, a guy from the Civil Rights Commission came to visit. We had hundreds of people coming to Jackson from all over the state. I mean, hundreds. And he said, I want you to ride to the airport. Yeah, I said, okay. He said, do you know that the federal government is not going to allow this to continue? I said, what do you mean? You're going to kill all of us? Kill all of us? He said, no. He said, we're going to do everything we can to break it down. He said, because imagine what would happen if people throughout this country begin to really take seriously how they can impact on policy. And you know, it was never proven to me, I mean, we heard different things, it was never proven to me so clearly how frightened this country is of an enlightened, indigenous, issue-oriented movement of people. I mean, because you're talking about possibility of making change and forcing the kind of reaction from the government that it can't really justify. But see, again, look at John Doerr, the hero of blacks in Mississippi. And he was, in fact, that. I remember people in federal district court when I was testifying for the lawyers committee to practice in Mississippi because white lawyers couldn't defend folks and black lawyers. And one of the guys stood up and talked to me in the courtroom. He said, "Giac, you know we're having a lot of trouble in our county, in Kemper County, and I'm going to call John Doerr." And I was very pleased at how people could identify with him in such a problem. But the church committee tells us that he's the same guy who organized the COINTELPRO. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, after Atlantic City, the government who had been helping us along the way suddenly said, "Wait a minute, we got to stop these folks." Mm-hmm. And everything they could do to stop us, they did. Mm-hmm. But we had learned in Greenwood, there's no such thing as secrets. Whatever you do, do it as though there's a camera on you. Mm-hmm. And that's where we were able to survive. And we always tied ourselves into the black community. So if you come at us, you got to come through some folks. Mm-hmm. And vice versa. If you come at them, you got to come through us. Mm-hmm. We always, very, very, even though we were making a salary of $9.48 a week, we were very, very careful to pay federal income tax. Ella Baker provided us with membership cards in the YWCA so we would have identification. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Look out for the nuances, because that's where they kill you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See, one of the other things that both SNCC and MFDP taught and taught very well, is that anything is possible. I mean, that may sound simplistic, but we taught two things. Well, three things. The correlation between information and power is immediate. Everything is political. And you can make a difference, providing you're willing to speak out. Now, I've tested those truisms.
I'm not taught in today's schools.
Huh?
That's not taught in today's school. I mean, you know, I mean, it's simple, but it's radical. It's,
mm-hmm. See, Courtland Cox and I argued about that, my connection between information and power, in Atlanta in 1963. GE now uses that as an advertising slogan. Mm-hmm. They knock out the word correlation.
Right.
See, it's amazing how, given the problems that we were faced with then and the problems that we're faced with now and the resurgence of racism, it all goes back to the question of the functionality of institutions and the power of the individual, which is becoming, this country is becoming more and more conformist, and people, the political gadflies, the true believers, are becoming fewer and fewer in number. There's a paper you ought to read. It's written by William Cody from the University of Maryland. It's an excellent paper. He does an analysis of MFDP as a third party in American history. And he comes out being very, very, very kind to us. There's another thing you ought to look at. Have you read the comparison of the 64 challenge and the 68 challenge?
Mm-mm.
There's a girl named Margaret. She was a secretary to Harding Carter. She wrote a doctoral thesis, and you just must read that. You can find the reference numbers to it in SNCC and Struggle, written by Carlson.
Okay.
I'm sure you've read that.
Right.
Good. Go back and read it. But I think it's called A Comparison of Two Challenges in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent paper. It talks about what we were doing, what the loyalists were doing, how we fought and won the 64 thing by ourselves. Then we had to unify with them for 68 mm-hmm. and did so. Mm-hmm. See? But again, it shows the power of the individual. Harry Bowie and I went around in 68 and we organized the nominating committees. So when we sat down with Harding Carter and Harding Carter and Charles Evers and Fayette, they said, who y'all got? They knew they had a screen, right? Mm-hmm. So we got we got 50% of that delegation. In pure power politics, we should have been a part of their delegation. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the way it worked out. Mm-hmm. How long did you talk to Harry Bowie? Because Harry Bowie is key to a lot of this.
Well, I didn't talk to him much about this period mm-hmm. after 64. Mm-hmm. Because actually, I was talking with him in the context of talking to Joe Martin, mm-hmm. who was down there. And at the time, I was researching McCone, so I was more into Joe's story.
Well, you see, Harry is key because he can talk about Delta Ministry, which he was a part of. Mm-hmm. He can talk about economic development after Delta Foundation. And he can also talk about the changes that have gone on in the Democratic Party there. Mm-hmm. He is